Buccaneers fans, here is the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Newport Richey, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton. This is the famed and heralded Ira Kaufman podcast. Ira is the star of the show. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKepper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. All the fun is presented by the place that's going to give you $2,000 if somehow, some way, you can find an offer from a Ford dealership that they can't match. Of course, we're talking about Bill Curry Ford, and they are going to beat any price, a new Ford, and they're also going to give you a shiny nationwide lifetime warranty on all new vehicles. You can ask for the Ira Kaufman discount on top of that, and it's all courtesy of Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium, and you can check out all the prices and the vehicles and shop at BillCurryFord.com. GM Sean Sullivan is ready to assist you. He'll also give you a $500 gift card. If you order a new vehicle online, it's so easy through their concierge ordering service, no deposit. So many great options at Bill Curry Ford. And also, we thank Florida's Elite Restoration. Don't mess around, Ira. Sean Sullivan of Bill Curry Ford, he didn't mess around. He had damage at his property near the beach. At the last storm, he called Florida's Elite Restoration. He said it was just completely everything that needed to be done was done within 48 hours, ready to restore the property to get his new floor in and things like that. So he just is raving about them. He couldn't believe the professionalism. And that's what you get at Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Storm damage, flood, fire, mold, whatever it is, call them first. You'll get a free evaluation. Tell them the Sage sent you when your first call or Joe Bucks fan. And if you eventually need their services, they'll give you $500. Maybe that's cash for your deductible or just cash back. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Get there immediately. And so you're prepared. It's just that simple. You need someone you can trust. And Big Storm Beer is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. We'll talk more about them later, Sage. And Ira, I got a tough question for you out of the gate. So I'm excited.
Wait a minute. This is supposed to be a bye week, a time to relax, regather some momentum, have a couple of chips and salsa, and right out of the gate, you're trying to make me squirm, Isbitz.
Well, yeah, we got to put some juice in you. Yeah, like it's like a little cattle prod. But Ira, look, Ira, here's the question I got for you, because you know what? We're talking big on this podcast because we have every right to. And frankly, no Bucks fan should be negative at this point. So we have to ask the tough question. And Sage, here's the tough question. The Bucks are 3-1, and we've got 13 games remaining. Now, you know the schedule quite well, but I'm going to zip it off to you real quick.
I'm looking at it right now, Steve.
All right.
Now.
You're looking at it right now. So for our listeners who are not, the next two are Detroit and Atlanta at home, followed by Buffalo and Houston on the road. The Buffalo is a quick turnaround Thursday night game. And then the Bucks come home for Tennessee. They hit the road for the 49ers and the Colts, home for Carolina, and then back on the road at Atlanta and at Green Bay on December 17th. Let's hope it's reasonable weather. And then they finish up Jacksonville and New Orleans at home, followed by closing at Carolina. Sage, what is your path? What is your path for the Bucks to win the NFC South and finish with a winning record?
I have a very clear path, Steve. I am dividing this season, the way I look at it, into three parts. The first part is finished. The four games before the bye week. They get an A. Lee, part two for me is the next six games. I think they need to go 3-3. I think they can go 3-3. Although I don't think they'll win in Buffalo or San Francisco. But I still think they can go 3-3. And then, Lee, that will be 10 games in the books. And for me, part three is the final seven. I'm including the road game against the Colts. Because to me, the Colts are mediocre, maybe even less than. I think they're playing a little bit over their heads. Lee, I think the closing schedule is very, very favorable for this organization. Jacksonville's good, but they're not playing particularly well. Lee, we'll see. Green Bay? I mean, who's Green Bay, Lee? I mean, they did come back against the Saints a couple of weeks ago, but, you know, as we found out, the Saints aren't particularly good. I love the closing seven games, Lee. Can they go 3-3 and take a 6-4 record into a very favorable closing schedule? I think that's the key. The one game, Lee, that I'm concerned about, only because I wasn't concerned about it a month ago, is the Texans game. November 5th, C.J. Stroud, I got to give it up to Sean Sullivan, general manager, Bill Curry Ford, draft guru. Lee, we all remember, he really talked up C.J. Stroud. He thought he was a better prospect than Bryce Young. C.J. Stroud, Lee, hasn't thrown a pick yet. He hasn't been picked off. They're playing well. The Steelers and the Jaguars, they kicked their asses. DeMeco Ryans is doing a hell of a job. And that's a game, Steve, when the schedule came out, I got to go to Texans. I'm like, good, I'm glad it's a road game. The Texans think anyway. And now they don't, Lee. Now they don't. So when you consider, I don't like that. I don't like four road games out of a five-week span, Lee. You don't see that very often. And I think the Detroit game is going to be very tough, Lee. Very tough.
Yeah, I agree with you. By the way, what a shock. Houston dumps Lovie Smith and brings a football coach in. Look what happens. The Detroit game to me is a big test. And this is why. I think Detroit is a lesser version of the Eagles. It's built and developed very similar to the Eagles.
Very physical.
They're a physical team. They want to pound the ball. They want to make you feel it, you know, that kind of stuff. So Detroit is sort of like the Eagles. Now, we saw that Eagles, I don't think it's a stretch to say the Bucs got manhandled in that game. They got their hat handed to them. Eagles were just much more physical team. Well, Detroit is a similar kind of team. Not quite as good as the Eagles, but similar. Have the Bucs advanced? Have they gotten better? Have they learned how to combat a physical team? I think that will be a big test. And if they could beat Detroit, who knows what this team could do. But I think that's a litmus test, the Lions game. I really do. It's a home game, physical game. It's going to be during the day, creamsicle day. That is a benchmark for the season. What can the Bucs do with the Lions?
And, Steve, speaking of benchmarks, I think the bar that has to be met, at bare minimum, Steve, is splitting the next two games at home. You can't lose to Atlanta, Steve, at home. No. And so I wouldn't call this a must-win against Detroit coming off the bye. Detroit might be a better team. I mean, they just might be. I think Jared Goff's underrated, Steve. I think he's pretty good. They got players. This Aiden Hutchinson, the guy's tremendous. Highly touted out of college, and the Lions landed him. And the guy's fantastic. He's one of the great pass rushers in this league. He's young. He's hungry. He's going to be a lot to handle for the Bucs. I don't know if he's going to line up opposite Wirfs or opposite Gedeky, but Steve, to me, they should not be any worse than 4-2 heading into that tough stretch of six games.
All right, so if they are 4-2 and then they hit that stretch, you said it's the middle stretch of six games.
Six games.
That middle stretch. So that middle stretch, what are you putting them at in this middle stretch? And you got your middle stretch of six games, not counting Indianapolis, which starts the final stretch of seven. So where are you putting them in this middle stretch? 2-4, 3-3?
The next six games, I've got them 3-3.
So Sage, you got them 3-3 in this middle stretch of games. That puts them at 6-4. Going into what you think is going to be an easier stretch. So are you telling me right now, are you telling America, the nation, the world, all your listeners south of Copenhagen, that the Bucs are going to win 10 games this year?
It looks like they got a good chance to win 10 games. I can't believe I'm saying it. Lee, a lot of things can go wrong, Lee. Now, they were 2-0 last year, and the wheels came off, Lee. The wheels came off. They went 6-9 the rest of the way, Lee, and 6-10 if you count the playoff game. A lot can happen. Injuries are always the factor, Lee.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Mayfield is winning people over, Lee, left and right. Winning them over. Most importantly, his teammates. Becoming part of the community. I'm starting to believe that this is looking like, 2020 for Baker Mayfield. When his team did very well and he did very well. And right now, Lee, the thing that's really stunning to me, and I admit it, I didn't see a lot of Baker Mayfield until this season. I don't think a lot of Buck fans did. Lee, I didn't know that he was so resourceful in the pocket, in avoiding sacks. I mean, it's not like guys aren't coming free on him. They're not bringing him down. They're plus +7 in turnover ratio. No wonder Bowles is smiling. No wonder Bowles is saying, yeah. Wait, plus +7. A quarter of the way through the season? That's a big reason they're 3-1.
You know, I'm like you. I didn't, you know, monitor Baker Mayfield that closely before, but I don't know if surprise is the right word, but he seems nimble. I didn't know he was that nimble.
Coming around the corner, Steve, he ain't Jalen Hurts. But Lee, what he does is he lowers his shoulder and gets another 3 yards. Whether that's wise over the long haul, we'll see. But I'll tell you what, it's had a galvanizing effect on his teammates.
Oh, yeah. Light said that. I think Steve documented it. Light said it on SiriusXM that his teammates love it when he, you know, like you said, it may not be wise, but it sure resonates with his teammates when he lowers his shoulder for an extra couple yards to get a first down.
Well, actually, Lee, let me pin you down then. So what do you see the Bucs' record at this point? How do you sort of break up the season? Ira, put it into two more parts. I've got something a little bit different, but what do you see right now?
To paraphrase Raheem Morris, it's a race to 9. Titans might give them the division title. 10 wins should. So that's the way I look at it. And I almost hate to say this, but I'll just admit it. I'm going to be like a football coach here. I'm taking it week by week. I'm not looking too much ahead. You know, right now I'm focused on the Lions. And like I stated earlier, I think that's a benchmark. You know, did the Bucs learn how to tackle, so to speak, a physical team? Have they learned how they can beat such a team? I don't know that. I'm not worried about Atlanta. The only division game I'm worried about is the next time the Bucs host the Saints. Was that a fluke? Did the Saints just play lousy? Did the Bucs just take advantage of turnovers? That's the only division game I'm worried about right now.
And Steve, another opportunity for the Bucs to beat a team with a winning record. They didn't do it against the Eagles. We see what, we've seen what Minnesota and the Bears and the Saints are like. Detroit's a winning team, Steve. They're going to end up being a winning team. They're not going away. They're young. They got a fiery coach. Going to be a good matchup at Ray J.
Yeah, especially coming off the bye week and the freshness and the health that comes with that. Should be a great game for anybody who hasn't seen it yet. It was flexed to the 425 slot on Fox. Yes. But Ira, here's how I look at it, right? I look at the division and I say, and fans I think aren't going to like this, but I think there's no reason the Bucs can't go 3-2 in these remaining division games. That's where I put them at, 3-2. And that gets me to 6 wins. And then that gives us, that's 5 remaining games in the division plus the 4, and then we've got 8 left. So then it comes down to how many games can we win from there. And I think they've got 3-5 left in the final 8 if you really carve it up and who they can beat and who they may struggle with. I think it's going to come down to get those 9 wins. I think they got to either beat Green Bay on the road or Detroit. Then I think they'll get one of them, and it'll be a glorious 9-win season. How about that, Ira?
Steve, I'm going to go back to my breakdown, and I'm looking after the game at the 49ers, which I believe Mr. DeKemper is planning to attend the week before Thanksgiving. Steve, they got the Colts, the Panthers, the Falcons, the Packers, the Jaguars, the Saints, and the Panthers. Lee, am I wrong? But none of those teams has a winning record. None of them, including the Jaguars. Lee, am I wrong? I don't believe I am. I think Green Bay might be 2-2. And, you know, Lee, before the season, you never know how these teams are. You know, nobody knew the Texans would be competitive. Nobody knew that the Bengals, Lee, would struggle. But now, you know, you got a much better feel for these teams. I don't share Steve's trepidation about Taylor Heinicke. Steve's got something, you know, I've been listening to Izbits for about 3 years now about Taylor Heinicke. That for whatever reason, he loves himself some Taylor Heinicke. I don't know why. I think the guy's mediocre. It's not like Trevor Lawrence is stepping into the breach here or Geno Smith. It's Taylor Heinicke. I don't think he's going to jumpstart the Falcons, but I agree with Steve. Desmond Ridder's hanging by a thread in Atlanta. Arthur Smith might be coaching for his job, Lee. He might be. You know, they go 7-10. I think you might have to make a move in Atlanta. But I'm not as concerned about Heinicke. Lee, I don't know how you feel about Heinicke.
When your other option is Desmond Ridder, Heinicke looks like. I think Taylor Heinicke's a gamer. He's sort of like a junior Baker Mayfield. When you have him counted out, he rises from the dead and he hurts you. Remember, he played against the Bucs in the playoffs in 2020, and he gave the Bucs a hell of a game that night.
He did.
So I understand where Steve's coming from. No, he's not Josh Allen, but he's a guy that I think you need to respect. I don't mean to say you, Ira, need to respect him, but a defense needs to respect. I think he commands a level of respect. I don't respect Desmond Ridder whatsoever. And to your point about Arthur Smith, I think he's a good coach, but I think there will be a sit-down with your buddy, Artie Blank. And Artie Blank will tell the other Artie, look it, man, it's 2023. Get a 21st century offense, and you're safe. If you want to play this 1970s run your boat, feel free. You'll get fired.
Steve, Atlanta's a team that could very well be looking at this 24 draft with these quarterbacks, 5, 6, 7 of them, according to Sean Sullivan, might be taken in the first round. And Steve, Atlanta looks like a team that's going to win, you know, 7 games, 8 games. And I don't know if they're going to be in a position to pluck off one of the top 3, 4 quarterbacks. Maybe not. But they could be stuck in that purgatory, Steve, because they're not going to go 3-14, and they're not going to go 11-6, where they're not going to be looking at a quarterback. They're kind of stuck, the Falcons, right now.
The Heinicke thing, over the last 2 years, he's 12-11-1 with Washington, and they never had much of a run game. So he's like Lee said, he's kind of a junior Baker Mayfield in some ways, but he's a winner from the sense of he's not a loser. And so that's a guy who can win some games. Dangerous, that's all. Because they've got a ton of weapons. They've got a run game. And who knows? I think the game on the Bucs schedule that's become a bit of a wild card is the Titans at home, too. And Ira, you said we're learning more about these teams. If not for a terrible, terrible call, they'd be 3-1. They should have beaten the Saints on opening day. It was a horrible call. They're also physical, and it's an interesting game, much more than I think it appeared early.
I think Vrabel's doing a good job in Nashville. I don't like their roster. I'm not overly impressed with the Titans. I mean, Derrick Henry's a beast. There's no question about it. He's still great. I look at their receivers, Lee. No, nobody scares me. Tannehill's, you know, middle of the pack, you know, number 14, number 15 quarterback in the league. Defense is physical, but not stocked with a lot of pro bowlers. Vrabel's done a good job, Lee, of keeping them competitive. I look at their roster, and I think the Bucs are better.
Vrabel is a good coach, but, you know, the way some people talk, like the guy's the next Bill Belichick, let's calm down.
Right.
I'll say this real quick about Artie Smith and Mike Vrabel and these guys. What do we always hear defensive coaches say? Todd Bowles in particular. It's like a common denominator for defensive coaches. What do we hear them say? Make an offense one-dimensional. Well, Vrabel and Artie Smith and guys like that who want to run the ball 70% of the time and they have schlock for quarterbacks like Desmond Ridder and Ryan Tannehill, they're building offenses that are one-dimensional from the get-go. I've got a huge problem with that mentality. I just do. You have to have a variety. You have to be able to run, yes. You also have to be able to pass. We're in a passing league. I just don't understand this, throwback mentality to the 70s. Let's run the ball, and we'll get by with a garbage quarterback. I don't understand that.
I think that's a fair point.
It's an interesting schedule for the Bucs. I'm glad we're all seeing the team as a winner. DeAndre Hopkins starting to get a little hot for Tennessee, Ira, and they could be a more balanced, more modern offense by the time they see the Bucs. So who knows? Sage, it's fun. It's good to see that you are you're looking at a 10-win Bucs team. It's hard to believe, but I know you're a believer. Your column at JoeBucsFan.com was about postseason awards. You even hinted that Todd Bowles could be a Coach of the Year candidate. maybe even a leader if he gets the Bucks to 10 wins and a division title. Wouldn't that be something?
It's very early, Lee. It is. And look, I'm not totally sold on this team yet. I don't think the three of us are. It's early. We're at the quarter pole.
Well, wait a minute. Sold. What does that mean? Sold. What does sold mean? What do you think they suck? I mean, what do you think?
I don't think they suck, but I can't help but go back to last year a little bit. Everybody was so excited, beating Dallas. Dallas was a good team in 2022. Then beating the Saints. And then it went nowhere, Lee. It went nowhere. So this is four games. That was two games. There's still a chance things go off the rails, Lee. It's too early. It is too early. I love the 3-1 start, Lee. I love it. But, Lee, we have to remember that game against Philly. And, Lee, I'm going to say it right now. Buck fans don't want to hear it. I'm not sure the Eagles played their A game that night. Hurts wasn't that good. And they had a 25-3 lead in the fourth quarter on the road against the Bucs. So when you look at it that way, Steve, you see the gap between the top echelon and the Bucs. If they beat Detroit, sort of go ahead of Detroit in the power rankings, that would mean something to me. But right now, I think that's a very tough game. It's early. We can't go too crazy. I'll tell you the one thing that I want to see when the Lions come marching in, Lee. I'm very curious about it. Can you suit up Kalijah Kansi? Can you get in the lineup? Can you? I mean, we were told at the beginning that the guy might be ready by week one. Lee, that's going to be week six. Can I see Kalijah Kansi?
Well, he was on the field week one, believe it or not, and then he re-aggravated that calf. I spoke with him last week, and obviously it was off the record, and I'm not at liberty to say what he told me. But I think it's fair to say, fair to explain, he's beyond frustrated. He wants on the field badly. And me personally, unless your name's Myron Lewis, I really haven't met too many NFL players that want to be hurt. Myron Lewis is an exception. He wanted to be hurt. He didn't want to play. So I don't think this is like a guy dogging it or anything like that. At least I sure don't get the impression he is.
If they could get Kansi and Jamel Dean back for the Detroit game, Steve, this has the look of a very rugged defense for Todd Bowles.
Sage, you got to catch up on your Joe Bucks fan reading. Light, he said that Kalijah is, quote, finally trending to be 100% now very quickly. And the implication was that he'll be back for the Lions game. So, hey, that would be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Light did a bit of a media tour. I know you took in a lot of it, and there's probably even more to come. Who knows what kind of pre-recorded interviews he did. But he decided to make a tour as a winning general manager with a story to tell. And the one thing that intrigues me the most, I'm sure Lee's got plenty of things that caught his eye, but the way Light's talking about Mayfield, he's talking about how Bruce Arians and he used to talk about Mayfield for all the years that Arians was head coach, which makes you wonder why were they talking about Mayfield a lot. This is what Light said when you have Jameis Winston and Tom Brady as your quarterback. And he's lauding him about how Mayfield is finally with a team that has fully embraced him and is hugging him up. And he's talking with Rich Gannon, who's saying, I understand what that's like to wait for years for a team to really embrace you as the guy and all this. And, everybody loves Mayfield and Light, knew the players would like him and all this stuff. And I'm wondering, when did everybody stop talking about Kyle Trask and this stiff competition? And the way Light's talking about it now is he's talking about it as if from day one, Mayfield was the guy and, we love what he's bringing. And it looks like they're, hoping and planning for it to be a long-term thing.
Steve, you're talking to the guy who said before the first preseason game that the so-called competition is over. So remember that, Steve. Remember that. I never bought into it. I think Lee was a little skeptical, maybe not as much as I was, but skeptical that both guys were starting from ground zero, and it was all about who looks better in training camp. And I always thought Mayfield was going to be the guy, and then I was told that he is the guy, and so I went with it. and took some heat for that. Steve, why was Arians and like talking about Baker Mayfield, you know, during 3 years that they had Tom Brady? Lee, the answer's simple. Brady was a short-term answer. That's the answer. Brady was never looked at long-term, so they got to start thinking about life after Brady, and you can't wait till the last minute. I think they always had Mayfield on their mind, even though Arians left a year ago. You know, Light was always thinking about him. And I believe Light said on Peter Schrager's podcast, Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, but he sort of implied that Mayfield picked the Bucks as much as the Bucks picked Mayfield. Interesting. Sort of like, you know, Brady came aboard with the Bucks in part, you could say, well, he didn't have a lot of suitors. You could say that. Or you could say he looked at the roster that Jason Light had assembled over the years, and he liked what he saw. And I think maybe the same thing applies to Mayfield, but I'm not trying to imply, Lee, that Mayfield had a lot of options. I don't think he did.
No, Mayfield did not have a lot of options, though. Baltimore, and Steve is the one who broke this story, we got it confirmed, Baltimore wanted Mayfield because at the time, you know, Lamar Jackson was squawking about his contract. They didn't know
right.
if he was going to sit out or not. And Sean McVay wanted to keep Mayfield, but only as a backup. Now, Michael Lombardi, months ago, was pounding the table saying he knows for a fact that the Rams were shopping Stafford. And if that's the case, well, yeah, Mayfield would have been, you know, the heir apparent there. So, well, here's what I can say about Mayfield and the Bucks and the quarterbacks. You're not wrong about Brady. And you're not wrong as there's a couple years there where the big thing was, is Brady coming back? Is Brady coming back? Nobody knew. But also when the Bucks soured on Jameis the last couple weeks of the 2019 season, you know, Arians at least publicly claimed there were two quarterbacks on his radar. One was Brady, the other was Teddy Bridgewater. Now, I hope people can dust themselves off the floor from laughing about that. Mayfield may have been available from the Browns at the end of the 2019 season. I don't know where this started, but he didn't get along with his teammates back then. He didn't get along with Odell Beckham. He may not have gotten along with Jarvis Landry, but there was some sort of tension coming out of Cleveland. I don't know if that was manufactured or not, but maybe Mayfield was being shopped himself, and perhaps the Bucks, like, hey, you know, Steve's written about this many times, that Arians did several Browns games in his 1 year as a CBS analyst, and he loved Mayfield. So maybe there was some smoke there, I don't know. But simply put, Mayfield was available, the Bucks needed the quarterback, and yeah, like Brady, he saw Evans and Godwin. And nothing a quarterback likes more than a couple of elite receivers.
No question. Hey, Steve, and you guys, I got to give you credit. You're always trying to get ahead of the curve, and you're very good at it. And I think both of you have weighed in on this extensively. Even though we're only four games into the season, Steve, you guys are talking and writing about Canales and his future, his short-term future, which means beyond this season. And you're talking about if the Bucks have a heck of a season and Mayfield goes along with the ride and kind of leads the way, then, you know, Canales all of a sudden is a very attractive candidate as a head coach, potentially, for a team that's going to be looking in the offseason. Steve, you think you're getting ahead of yourself? You know, what kind of job is Canales doing?
It's obvious that he's doing a very good job. The results are the results. He's adapted already. He's made some adjustments. I think you're going to see more and more adjustments. And, you know, I said to you guys before the season, I don't believe at all that they're going to be this run-heavy team when it's all said and done, because every offensive coordinator around looks at your strengths and says, that's what we got to do. And Canales just this last week said, we've learned through four games that we are a very, very good pass-blocking offensive line. That's what he said. And yes. You know, and he's also encouraging the younger receivers to get involved, even though they're making mistakes. He's telling his receivers coach, we got to keep rotating them in and all this stuff because we're going to need them. I just think it's going to morph into more of a passing offense. We'll see what he does. We'll see if the run game can get going. Ultimately, he is responsible for that. But my fear, Ira, is that he's going to do a good job. And if he gets that head coaching gig, well, the natural thing is for him to go get a head coaching gig and bring free agent Baker Mayfield with him. Because he's going to, if he goes out searching for a job, he's going to say, hey, we're a package deal. I won't just bring you me. I'll bring you the quarterback that I just had in the Pro Bowl. And that's going to be very attractive to somebody who really wants to hire Canales, maybe in Minnesota, who knows what.
What I've been impressed with Canales, maybe the most, and it helps when you're playing stout defense and not turning the ball over, which the Bucs have been exemplary through four games on both counts. But Lee, somehow, some way, they're still running the ball almost as much as they're throwing the ball. At the same time, Lee, that they're not getting particular production out of the ground game. I mean, not really any better than last year by the sheer numbers, although it feels a little better than last year. Lee, somehow they still run the ball 30 times, even if they're only getting 90 yards out of it. He kind of sticks with it.
Well, you know, he's admitted a couple times that his word's not mine. You have to be stubborn about it, that sooner or later it's going to break. Sooner or later, you're going to get those yards. And so that's why he keeps doing it. But he's built a good passing game. People are shocked that Mayfield's throwing the ball and throwing well. My two takes on Canales. If I'm an owner that has no quarterback and I'm wanting to draft a first-round draft pick of a quarterback, after seeing what Canales has done for Kyle Trask and Mayfield, I definitely want to talk to Dave Canales.
And maybe even Geno Smith to a certain extent. Yeah.
And I see where you're going there, Ivan. I don't discount it, but I don't know if he was just a bystander. I don't know how much input he had with Geno Smith. I don't. So right. I can see the dots connected, and you're not wrong. I just don't know how much impact or input that Canales had with Geno Smith. But I certainly know the input he had with Mayfield and Trask. I've seen that. So right there's my evidence. I don't know about Geno Smith, but it looks good on his resume. But if I'm an owner, and I'm hell-bent on drafting a quarterback in the first round, I want to talk to Dave Canales. Number two, fans don't give a damn about this. Owners do to a degree. He's fantastic at the podium. He's well-spoken. He's intelligent. He's not condescending at all. Yes, I'm talking about Byron Leftwich, and he has answers that make common sense.
Steve, he doesn't have that filter where all of a sudden you can see his mind going through, what if I say this, what if I say that? He doesn't seem to have that, and that's a beautiful thing from a media perspective.
You might need a filter, Ira. You got to work on your own filter. How about that?
Steve, have you noticed how much imagination are we witnessing with the Canales offense and the play calling? How imaginative is it?
Well, it's so early, Ira. You know, we're having fun here. Ultimately, the Bucs offense, they're 19th in scoring. They're 22nd in yards. They're last in yards per carry. He's not reinventing the wheel here, but it looks good because it looks different in part and because we're seeing some creativity. And we're seeing it in clutch moments, and Baker Mayfield is the best in the league passing on third down. So we'll see what lasts. But yeah, we've talked about some of this. There's a lot of good stuff going on. I think a great example or an interesting example was Devin Tompkins was on the Buccaneers radio network talking about his touchdown catch, and he fessed up and he said, I totally ran the wrong route. If you go watch it, I ran into Chris Godwin. I cut off his path. I screwed up the route. And when Mayfield scrambled, I just sprinted to space like we were supposed to, and I went all out to catch it, and that was that. You know, they're making mistakes, and things aren't perfectly smooth, but it's working. It's got to last, though.
That Tompkins touchdown, I don't think that could ever happen last year with Brady. And I'm not knocking Brady. You know, he's the all-time, and nothing he did last year is going to mess with that legacy. It's just not, and shouldn't. But, Lee, that play took an awful long time. That Tompkins touchdown. He started on the left side and ended up in towards the right corner of the end zone. And the key was Mayfield buying himself enough time. Lee, that wasn't going to happen last year.
Exactly right. Mayfield bought time. Brady was not going to do that. You're absolutely correct, Ira.
And if you slow the film down, Ira, on that pass, Mayfield throws the ball to a spot before Tompkins is even open. Just total faith in the receiver and put it to an empty spot, and that's why he dove for it, and you know, it worked out. But I mean, Canales looks great and sounds great, and so far so good, and I'm really curious to see how he adjusts. The Lions, that's the number two run defense in the league, and I think this is a benchmark game, like Lee said, for the season in a lot of ways, at least this next chunk of the season. But I think it's a benchmark game, Ira, for the trade deadline, which is coming up, and for Rashad White. Not that they're going to trade Rashad White, but if you can't run on the Lions and you're, and let's say you win anyway, and you're 4-1, and you're thinking, you know what, maybe we could win a playoff game or two. I think you got to really think hard about getting a running back in here, and it just gets amplified if it goes down that way. And, you know, Sneak Vaughn, Ira, we didn't talk too much about his appearance, but Canales said that he didn't just say, hey, he's our number two back right now. Sean Tucker is taking a step back. He said Sneak played because he knows the Saints so well, and we thought his eyes could adjust to their exotic plays, and that's why we went with him. I'm like, what? I understand the concept, but to not have Rashad White playing 85, 88% of the time, because Sneak Vaughn is such a great decipherer of defenses, just seemed a little odd.
I'm not buying that, argument about Sneak Vaughn. Steve made a very interesting point about this Buck running game. I think it factors win or lose. Now, look, Detroit is a very grudging, stingy run defense. We all know that. So were the Eagles, and the Bucks went nowhere. So, Lee, if the Bucks running game is pedestrian again, averaging 3 yards a carry, and they lose the game, the Bucks against Detroit, well, then you have a natural, you know, sense of urgency. We got to fix this going forward. But Lee, I'm looking at the other side. The Bucks running game goes nowhere, and the Bucks win the game anyway, and go to 4-1, and now all of a sudden, Lee, the expectations are raised around the building. You know, let's not stop with the division title. We might be able to make some noise. And Lee, if I'm Jason Light, I got to be sitting there thinking, hey, we're 4-1. If we can bump up this running game a little bit, and I'm not talking about trading Rashad White. We're not. First of all, you're not going to get much value for Rashad White. You're not. Not at this point. So it's not about trading them. It's about bolstering that running back room. I think either way, this game and this running attack, I think it could be very significant.
Well, here's something that Steve and I are quite interested in, and you could provide insight better than anyone in the Tampa Bay area, Ira. What would the Glazers think?
I think the Glazers at 4-1 with a nondescript running game would be very interested in adding a talented back. I don't care what it would cost. I don't care if it's a third-round draft pick. I'm making that move, and I think they would stress to Jason Light to go for it because, Lee, at this point, even the Glazers aren't thinking about the 2024 draft and those quarterbacks. Things have changed, Lee. Things have changed markedly from an ownership perspective, I think, in the last month.
So they might give Jason Light a nudge like, Jason, go get a running back.
Yeah, I mean, this is a one, you know, it's our one weak spot, and it's obvious. Go get him. I think win or lose, Steve, the running game is kind of on trial a little bit after the bye week.
I mean, Sage, I don't know. I mean, I watch a lot of these games on NFL Plus and the Game Pass and all that. And, you know, Arizona is such an interesting team because everybody thought they were trying to tank, and maybe they were. And you know, you got Josh Dobbs over there throwing 70% of his passes. But more important for this conversation is they're averaging 5.3 yards a carry. You know, a new offense, a new system, and they don't have exactly a superstar at running back. They've played the Giants, the Commanders, the Cowboys, and the Niners. You know, physical teams there. It's crazy, and it can be done. They just need, I think they need a better back and a little better scheming.
I got to say hats off to the Arizona offensive line. Lee, they must be doing a hell of a job. I don't think 5.3, Lee, is sustainable through 17 games. I mean, that's a huge number. You know, they might settle at 4.5, which is still very robust. But that's a big reason, Lee, that the Cardinals have been so competitive.
Yeah,
it's been the ball. Like Steve said, everybody and their brother thought they had the number one pick wrapped up.
I don't know if it's sustainable or not, Ira, but you almost think it might be if you can rack up those numbers and you've already played the Cowboys and the 49ers. Pretty crazy. The Bucs just got to get that.
And Steve, the one guy nobody talks about in terms of Arizona, nobody talks about Kyler Murray. Nobody.
Well, I guess if you're in Arizona, you do, but nobody I know, because we're in Tampa. We're in Tampa Bay, Sage, where the Big Storm beer is flowing. BigStormBrewery.com. Find your local tap room. Check out all the great beers. Check out all the menus. Ira's got that flatbread on lockdown now. The whole thing was gone. Didn't even offer me a bite. That's how I know the Sage.
And the mimosa, Steve. Don't forget about the mimosa.
You did, in fact, start with the mimosa. You can watch the games this Sunday in Ybor City. They've got the NFL Sunday ticket there. They open at noon. But pick up your Big Storm beer tap rooms in Clearwater. Great indoor-outdoor seating there. We mentioned the Pasco location. Amway Center in Orlando, open every day, and in Cape Coral as well. And you can find the Bromosa, the Tangerine IPA we talk about, wherever you find great craft beer. Although I was just in a store, Ira, and I saw the Wavemaker Amber Ale and the Tropic Pressure Golden Ale, but no Bromosa. So I had to scream at the manager, and he asked me my name. I told him it was Ira Kaufman.
Did he say he was going to take care of it, Steve? Is he going to take care of it?
No.
Have you guys sampled their Oktoberfest beer yet?
No, I have not, Lee. I have not.
I hear it's good, but I did see some four packs of it when we were in Ybor City, Central Ybor, but I did not. But it is out. All right, Sage, look, the Bucks here, Jason Light, like we said, he made the rounds. Anything that stood out additionally that you heard?
One thing I like, Steve, is that, and he said it very early in his interviews, keep some perspective, keep some context. Don't get carried away at 3-1. I mean, it's a beautiful thing, Lee. It's a beautiful start for this organization, especially when our Vegas boys said they're going to win 6 or 7 games, and it looks like they're going to beat that by a considerable margin. But Light stressed, long way to go. Lee, injuries, and they've had their share. But, you know, a couple of critical injuries, Lee, it just kills you. It just kills you. And I'm not even talking about Mayfield, Lee, not necessarily. I'm talking about Tristan Wirfs, God forbid. I'm talking about Antoine Winfield, God forbid. Maybe even Levante David or Vita Vea until Gansey proves that he can be an impact player. Lee, injuries will kill you in this league. And that's the X factor going forward. But I'm very curious to see how this defense plays at full strength. Even against a team that scores a lot of points like the Lions, Bowles, he's very crafty, Lee. He's very crafty, even when he's shorthanded on defense. I want to see what he does with a full deck.
Ira, you brought up something. I hope I'm not getting ahead of my skis here, and I probably am. Levante David is how old again, Steve? 34?
33.
Unless I actually look it up, I always get it wrong. What's he going to be like in December? Yeah, I always remember people screaming about, you know, how the Bucks unloaded talent after the 2008 season. Yeah. And, you know, fans were mad, but the Glazer family wanted them to get younger. And I still believe the collapse of that defense was all about the fact that they were old, and it showed in December, especially that Carolina Monday night game. So I'm curious, you know, what David's going to be like come December. He's not a spring chicken. That's on my mind as well. I'm not knocking him at all. It's facts of life. What will that defense be like if Levante David's superior level of play starts to tail off just because, you know, he's running out of gas?
Very interesting, Lee. Now, he is a great pro and keeps himself in great shape. But, Lee, to your point about the 08 season, and, of course, I was there for the whole collapse in December that cost Gruden his job. You're right, Lee. An older defense fell apart. You know, you can say Monty Kiffin's announcement that he was leaving, it played a part. I think that's overblown a little. But, Lee, those veteran defensive players that wilted a little in December, that included Derek Brooks.
Yes.
He was banged up a little, Lee. And, of course,
yes,
you know, he wasn't 25 anymore where, you know, you can recuperate a lot faster. And that was it. That was the last that Brooks ever played. I think he had some teams interested in him, but that was it. And Brooks in December, he was not the Derek Brooks that we all remember.
Antoine Winfield. I mean, the level of play, I mean, he's absolutely dynamite. And I think you mentioned that maybe he's a all-pro player. Boy, he's sure playing like one.
He sure is, Lee. And Steve, one other X factor with number 31, besides making great plays all over the field, and this is an intangible, Steve, he looks like he's having a hell of a time playing football. His passion, he's always on. He doesn't get down. And I kind of think that's contagious, Steve. Winfield, he's really setting the tone back there.
And that's just him personally. I mean, he just can't stop smiling. He's that guy. Devin White was very much that guy early, and then he got a little sour. I think some of the media got under his skin and some other things of fans. But for Winfield, that's who he is off the field. He just can't stop smiling. And I think he knows how much money is coming his way. That always helps to make a guy smile. Ira, injuries, you're right. And I think the big injury that everybody has to look at now, it's going to be glossed over until we know for sure. But I don't think the Bucs can beat the Lions without Mike Evans. So that's really a huge injury there. All right, look, Ira, we are out of here. Our thanks to Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, BillCurryFord.com. Shop now. No excuses. Shop there first. Reach out to Sean Sullivan if you got questions, if you need a deal, if you need the Ira Kaufman discount. BillCurryFord.com, Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Your first click whenever you have a disaster in your home, and they're your first phone call 24/7. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Sage, what are you doing this weekend?
My wife's making lasagna, Steve. She makes a great lasagna. I went out and got all the ingredients. That's the extent of my cooking. Like, go get the ingredients and let her handle it. I even got garlic nuts, Steve. I got garlic nuts to go along with it. And then I think we're going to go out on the weekend.
All right, Sage. Well, I'm sure the lasagna and the garlic nuts are on your diet. Pick up some Big Storm and have a good weekend.